Srila Prabhupada wanted Vedic College. Actually, he considered that this institution, this kind, was actually supposed to be one big university, one big college. Now, it had other aspects too, of course. Part of the university was deity worship, part of the university was cultural, prasadam distribution, all these things, but all under the umbrella of education. He even said, if simply in the temples they ring the bells and worship the Lord, but they don't explain the science, then it will not last. And we see that many temples that do not explain the science, after some time it becomes dry. Sometimes it even becomes like a business, just this is the way to support the priest, supports his family. Bhaktisiddhanta criticized that also, that they're showing the deity, they're taking the deity, Shalaka Shula is a nutcracker. So what that means is that it's not enough for Gaudiya Vaishnavas to simply engage in deity worship. Of course, that's essential. But Madhyamakars, we're aspiring to become Madhyamakar, means middle, intermediate devotee. He has a duty to show kripa to the balishesha, to the innocent persons. He has to give them mercy, and the mercy is in the form of knowledge. He has to educate them. The Kanishtha Adhikari, the third class, or Prakrita Bhakta, they don't understand the philosophy, they don't understand very well. They understand a little, but they're not inclined to preach. They're not inclined to extend themselves. Whereas the Madhyamakars, this is their duty. So this movement is primarily the inner membership, you could say, those who are actually members in full-time devotees. They are meant to become Madhyamakars, at least. And that means preaching. Now, preaching, we all know preaching. You can preach in homes, you can preach on the street, you can preach in the temple. And we do that. But Prabhupada also wanted that we establish the dissemination of this knowledge through formal institution, colleges and universities, because that is how the world has, that's how they've organized it. We see every country has universities and colleges and higher education. However, as Prabhupada said, quote, he said, we're traveling all over the world, but there's no university, no institution, no school, no college, where the education of spiritual nature is imparted. Where is that? You can go to the biggest universities, the biggest institutes, but they're not teaching the spiritual science. So how can you have education without understanding the spirit? It's ridiculous. It means that they're in ignorance about everything. Because if someone is teaching any subject and he doesn't understand how things are going on, for example, let's say he's teaching about physiology. I remember once they had a physiology book, and so they were telling about how the heart pumps blood throughout the body, and the body and the blood circulates, and then it comes back to the heart. And they were astonished that when the blood passes through the heart, something almost miraculous, they say it's miraculous, they don't know why, but all the blood becomes re-energized. That's why it comes back. When it goes through the heart, it becomes re-energized. Suddenly, it has energy again, and it takes that energy out, that nourishment out. So they didn't know, because they don't know about the spirit. They don't know that there's a soul situated in the heart. The living entity is situated in the heart, and because of his presence. Therefore, the blood becomes re-energized. And Prabhupada told, when he went to MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, he asked them if anyone there could tell the difference between a living person and a dead person, dead body, and no one could say. So, therefore the question is, well, what is the use of all their education if they don't even know who they are? The most basic thing is to know thyself, to know what we are. But they don't know. And they're not teaching it. They say, scientists say, that life is a combination of chemicals. You just, somehow or other, you mix the chemicals together, and then life is produced. And they say that's what happened in the past. And they say that in the future, they'll be able to prove it. But in the present, they cannot. So it's very, Prabhupada noticed that. He said, just see the flaw. They say it happened in the past, it will happen in the future, but at the present they can't do it. So, because their theory is wrong. They think everything, they don't see anything spiritual. And they are training the students all over the world, these type of leaders. So how can you expect to have a nice world when everyone is in ignorance about the soul? They don't even know that the soul exists. They don't know that after this life, after this body is finished, that the spirit is not finished. Scientists don't know that. Only the religionists, they'll say yes, the soul lives on. They have some idea. But it's also a vague idea. They don't really know what the soul or it is. Without understanding the life force, then what is the use of all the education? What's the purpose of it? If we don't accept that there's a spirit soul, and that spirit soul has some purpose beyond just the 50 or 80 years that he lives, then what is the use of all the big philosophers and all the literature? Shouldn't we try to solve that problem? Because by nature, everyone wants to live. No one wants to die. Not only human beings. If you look at any species, the bugs, the dogs, if someone makes a sound, the dog is frightened, he runs. He wants to protect himself. He wants to live. The trees, if you try to block the trees, no, they will struggle to exist. Every living entity wants to live. Why? Because it's our nature to live. It's our nature to be eternal. But without this knowledge, then the whole idea of living here doesn't make any sense. And that's why they come up with different theories that it's all a product of chance. And it's all random. There's no intelligence behind it. And basically, when it finally comes down to it, they'll say, there's no need for God. I spoke with some scientists sometime, and they said, so let's begin the discussion. And I said, but let's not bring in God, because we don't think there's any necessity. So that, no soul and no God. That means there's no designer, there's no ultimate intelligence, there's no controller, and there's no individual soul. Everything is just matter. This is their idea. And this soulless, godless education is being presented as the fact. And if you say anything different, they won't even let you teach. They will not let you. If you say your religion, they generally won't even let you teach in the colleges and universities. You have to say your science. Okay, so that's the whole point, is that we don't want to be known as a religion. When people would ask Prabhupada about it, he said, so what about your religion? He said, it's not religion, it's science. It's a spiritual science. Science of self-realization, it's a science. Now, they'll say, well, science, where's the proof? But the proof is there for anyone who follows the procedures, just like in a laboratory. If one follows a formula, mixes certain chemicals under certain conditions, then there's supposed to be a particular chemical reaction. And it should happen. It should be replicable. It can be done in any laboratory. And certainly that's a fact. We see that if one practices the principles of bhakti yoga, then he will actually get revelation. He will receive this mystical knowledge, you can say. Rahasyam yeta duttamam. Krishna says, I'm explaining bhaktosime sakala cheviti rahasyam yeta duttamam. I'm giving you this most rahasya, means very secret, confidential knowledge. Uttamam, the topmost. I'm giving you the topmost knowledge because you're my devotee as well as my friend. So unless one becomes a friend and a devotee of Krishna, he will not be able to get this rahasyam eta uttamam. He will not be able to get this higher knowledge. He will be able to have some technical knowledge. But even the bugs, they all have technical knowledge. You see the spider, he knows how to make his web very expertly according to stress and, you know, all the different... He knows how to, where to put the next piece, and he waits there like a yogi in meditation. He doesn't move. He's got good self-control. He controls his senses. He can wait there for such a long time. So he has all good qualities, but he's just a spider. His business, what is his business? His business is sucking blood. Prabhupada gave the example of the vulture. The vulture has very good eyesight. He can see miles away. And he flies 5 miles up. And he's looking down with this very good eyesight. Better than you. You cannot see. But what is his business? Where's the dead carcass? And he goes there and eats the dead carcass. That's it. That's his business. So what is the use of having all this technology? You can see with the Hubble telescope and the microscope. I mean, your business is the same as the vulture. Simply eating some dead carcass and having sex like the animals. What is the use of that? They don't know. They don't know what the purpose of life is. Without the purpose, without knowing that, and everything else is a waste of time. It's like starting a mathematical formula. And 2 plus 2 equals 5 plus AB times 6 to the... But if you say 2 plus 2 equals 5, it's wrong from the beginning. So everything else will be wrong. And they start off from the very beginning with the wrong calculation. They say, we are matter. We are this body. Therefore, there needs to be a complete overhaul of the educational system. Actually, Prabhupada said that their whole civilization should just be destroyed. Because then he said, alright, you can keep the buildings. We'll use the building. But basically, it's incorrect. It's all wrong. Everything is based on wrong conceptions. Even when they get into things like archaeology, they can't help themselves. Because they don't understand the soul, but they speculate. They think that bodies have evolved, and one body became another species. One species became another species. Because they don't understand. Prabhupada said that actually Darwin, he took his information from the Padma Purana. Padma Purana describes a different species. So he got some idea from the Puranas. But he didn't understand it because he didn't have a guru. So he didn't understand that it was the soul that was transmigrating and not the species changing, not the bodies changing. So he got the wrong idea and misled the whole world. This is what's happening. The example is given that if you have a big cobra, a poisonous snake, so it's very dangerous, everyone's afraid. But if he has a big jewel on his forehead, does it mean that he's less dangerous? No. So this modern education is like the dangerous cobra with a jewel on his forehead. But the only difference is he has that valuable jewel, but he's just as dangerous. In fact, he's more dangerous because someone may think, let me try to get that jewel. We must compete. In other words, we cannot remain just as a religion. Because, you see, religion has a bad name, and it's getting a worse name all the time. As soon as you say, I'm Hindu, I'm Muslim, uh-oh, or I'm Christian, oh no. They're so upset with religions because they think religions just keep fighting all the time. But, we never see the universities wage war. And they like that. They like it that they're more rational thinkers. That's why they tend to like to put, of course, the scientists are, most of their work is for building, nuclear weapons and things like that. They don't consider. They don't consider what they're doing at the universities. They're building nuclear weapons. But they give a bad name to religion and they hang it. So we don't want that name of religion because it's misunderstood. It's a type of faith. We want to be known as scientists. And again, we can prove it. This knowledge is provable. That doesn't mean that everyone is qualified to understand the proof. Just like in the laboratory, it's not that anyone can understand how to perform a chemical experiment. One has to be a little bit trained how to make, he has to know how to mix, how to heat, how to... Some basic thing. So similarly, the science of Vedic knowledge begins with the sadhana bhakti, vidhi bhakti. It's a science. He begins with a little faith. That means he's hearing a little bit. He's heard from them and he wants to hear. He goes to hear. And then after hearing, he gets more faith. His doubts are dispelled. And he thinks, now I want to associate with these people more and more. I want to live with them. Then I want to get further knowledge. Bhajana Kriya. Because when he takes initiation, then he is allowed to enter into more confidential knowledge. He's able to understand higher truths. It's part of the science. When Prabhupada was, some of you may have seen his original prospectus for the League of Devotees. Any of you ever seen that? Yeah, well, Jansi, I think. So, he was saying that the students will participate, they'll take classes, they'll take prasadam and this and that. And he said after a certain period of time, they'll take initiation. There was no choice. Prabhupada didn't consider that a choice. It was part of the educational process. Because if you want to get transcendental knowledge, then this is the process. So therefore, our colleges have to incorporate that too. They cannot simply be theoretical, armchair, like the Vedanta Society or something like that. They discuss some philosophy, dry philosophy. But then they're afterwards sipping tea, smoking cigarettes, and what is the use? There's no vigyan. Gyan means knowledge, and vigyan means realized knowledge. Therefore, he wanted that our colleges should be based on Gyan and Vigyan, both theoretical as well as practical application. Prabhupada said that the Vedic, the establishment of the Vedic college is essential, and he said, quote, then the world will be saved from destruction. So that, if we, what better altruistic activity can you engage in than, wouldn't you like to save the world from destruction? Well, it's on the brink of destruction now. Isn't it? We see. How close are we to world war? Pakistan is, right? Between Pakistan and India, there's almost war every day. And Iraq, America, war. Israel, another war. War is going on all over. And big scare. Now we have nuclear weapons. With our scientific advancement, we can destroy more people faster in a very short period of time. This is our progress. This is the, what we've, this is what we can show from our modern educational system. That we have nuclear weapons pointed at each other's heads. That our social situation is abominable. The family institution is breaking apart. We kill our own babies. Now we're killing old people also. Euthanasia is becoming... I read that there's one country, I think Switzerland, they allow them. You can go to Switzerland and you can become exterminated. You can be killed there legally. They will allow it. They're very good at getting money, as you know, the Swiss banks. They're very expert at drawing people's money. So they've come up with another idea. You can come, or maybe if your grandparents are not willing, you can also maybe figure out some way to get some lawyer to sign some paper on their behalf. So in this way, killing the babies, killing the old people, killing the cows, killing the animals, killing the other group, it's a killing civilization. They talk about creating life, but they haven't done it. But they're very good at destroying, killing. So if we look at what modern education has produced, so much perversion in every sphere, why should we be so, why should we have so much confidence in the status quo? Why should we think that this educational system is very good? When you go to a big university and you walk on the campus, you're overwhelmed. It's overwhelming the atmosphere that they've created, that they actually have knowledge. You know, you walk through some of these big universities and these big, they have so much money and big buildings and so much prestige and books and libraries. You walk through the libraries and there's aisles and aisles and miles and miles of aisles of books. But what's in the books? Meshes. Avidya. All ignorance. I think, perhaps, maybe, in my opinion, this is their education. And who is he? Who is this man speaking? He is just fool number one, and he'll be dying very soon. He's already finished. And where did he go in his next life? No one knows. Maybe he's a termite in that library, chewing on the wood somewhere. He liked to chew on these big theories. So maybe he's chewing in one of the books now. And eating one of those old books and the termite. Because he lived his life on the level of a termite. He didn't get any higher knowledge. He didn't understand the purpose of life. He thought the purpose of life was just to eat, sleep, drink, and mate. Okay, so the first point is an understanding is that Prabhupada wanted Vedic college. And why he wanted Vedic college? Because in his brilliance, as in all the aspects, in every field, Prabhupada had a brilliant idea how to present Krishna consciousness. And by presenting these Vedic colleges, and educating young people, then we can create a whole new way of thinking, a whole new world. And this movement is meant for doing that. Let me read you a few. Here's a quote from a letter Prabhupada wrote on October 11, 1966. He said, "The construction of the buildings can now be taken up, and my American disciples are ready to spend for the proposed building of Sri Ruddha Mudrapara Vidyapeeth." Next letter was written in August 72. "But I do not think it is necessary for you to return to your university for taking further education. Your education is to be found in our books. The material education is finished. If you want to teach in universities and colleges, they must accept us on our high degree on Vedic learning, not on our so-called mundane academic credentials. They must accept our system of scholarly learning from the spiritual master." You see, Prabhupada was not interested in coming to their level that in order to impress them that we have to study their type of education. But no, they should accept us on our level, on our high level of transcendental knowledge that we get through the spiritual master, through parampara. And we should not be embarrassed about this. Sometimes we become a little bit squeamish, afraid to go and discuss with these big scholars because they will say, "Oh, you have no degrees. You can't discuss with us. We don't accept your knowledge as religious." But no, it is not simply religious dogma. It is provable and it's practical. I was speaking with one young man today and he was saying that, "How can I believe this just because someone tells me?" So I said, "Well, first of all, you should understand the discipline of succession. It's an unbroken chain." And he said, "But everyone knows that when the message is passed down from person to person, it changes." And I said, "No, but that's not the case in this sense. Krishna makes a special arrangement that through the Prabhupada once called it this is the miracle of the cyclic succession, that the knowledge remains pure, unadulterated. That is the safeguard. Another safeguard is that they cannot stray from the shastras. Guru, shastra, and sadhu. This way it remains pure. The sadhus will be checking, just like you have, the three checks and balances. In America, they have this the judicial, the executive, and the legislative branch. They consider that those three, they check and balance each other. So similarly, we have guru, shastra, and sadhu. The shastras are coming down. The gurus make sure they're not changed, and the sadhus make sure they're not changed. And the guru is teaching, and the shastras make sure the guru doesn't change the teaching, and the sadhus. And the sadhus are teaching, and the guru confirms, make sure he's not changing it, and the shastras make sure. So in this way, checks and balances are there. Now, if someone says, "Well, how can we believe everything?" And I said, "Well, I have never heard one thing from Vedic teachings that, with my intelligence, seemed to be wrong or proved out to be wrong. But rather, I've heard hundreds and thousands and seen thousands and thousands of things that were stated in the Vedas, which turned out to be quite logical and practical. For example, vegetarianism. We were taught to be vegetarians, even when, at the time when vegetarianism was considered very dangerous to your health, at least in the West. I know in the early 70s, when we started to become a vegetarian, people were warning us, you're probably will die they said. You'll probably die of malnutrition. They were very serious. They were so ignorant that they thought that you couldn't live without meat. Now, of course, they've seen that a vegetarian diet is actually healthier. But you see, the Vedic knowledge doesn't depend on their discoveries. Whether they understand it or they don't. Vedic knowledge is always situated in perfectness. It's like now, there's bad propaganda against milk in the West. They're saying milk is bad for you, cholesterol, this, that. They're making big propaganda against milk. But the Vedas say milk is the best food. It's a miracle food. So who do we believe? We believe the Vedas. And we've seen that sages, they would live just on milk alone many times. So if it wasn't a perfectly well-balanced food, how could someone live on it? You can't live on motor oil or something like that. It has to be some nutritious food. Now, if there are any questions as we go along on these topics, if you raise your hand, we can discuss. Does anyone have any questions so far on anything that we've discussed? I was speaking with one senior devotee today, lady, and I was encouraging her to start a Vedic college. She's a very good preacher, very good organizer. So we're encouraging them to do that. In Alachua, they have a girls' high school academy, and now they're willing to take ladies older than the high school age. So yes, it's beginning. We have that one there, and Malati's group in Ashram in Columbus. They give some training and education. I'm sure that it will develop. Did I answer your question? Well, that of course brings us to the point of, you could say, the point is that this education is very important. And we must establish it in an organized way. We can use their system. Their system is all right. They have their buildings, and they have their credits and their degrees. That's fine. Just like we use their automobiles. Okay, for traveling, we use automobiles. For if we need to go somewhere far, we use a jet airplane. Okay. For now, we can use those things. We can also use the framework of their educational system. Any other questions so far? Okay, I'll read the next. This is a letter from a morning walk, April 6, 1976. Srila Prabhupada said, "Have Brahminical school. That I am willing to do. That is required absolutely. There must be a class of men, perfect Brahmana. Otherwise, society will be ruined." So that is the first goal of our Vedic college is Brahminical education. There must be a class of men, Brahmana. Because the Brahmana, he has all good qualities. Shamo, Dhamma, Tapak, Shau, Cham, Shantir, Arjunam, Evacham, Gyanam, Vigyanam, Astikyam, Brahmakaram, Svabhavajam. If you have no one in society that has these qualities, then what is the hope? You have no one who's truthful, no one who's self-controlled, no one who controls their mind, no one who's clean, no one who has knowledge, no one has spiritual knowledge, practical application. No one is religious. How can you have, what kind of society is this? It's an animal society. The Vedas say that. They say that vina pashubhi pashubna, what is it? Without dharma, dharmena hina pashubhi samana. Without Dharma, it's just animals, animal society. And where's the Dharma? Your professors are smoking, drinking, womanizing, eating meat. Where's the Dharma? So, in other words, it's simply animal society. Now, we may give the animal a nice, very nice dress. There's an analogy that if you put him on the throne, the king's throne, and you put the nice, what do you call it? The cape? Huh? The gown? The crown? You can even put a crown on his head? No. He's sitting on the throne. The king's throne, very high throne. And he's sitting there, looking out. And he has a little crown, because, you know, depending on the size of his head, a little nice crown, jewel crown. And he has a nice cloth, regal, and he's sitting there, and all the other ministers are sitting around, and everyone's looking at him. He's looking out. Looks very good. And then someone throws a shoe, and he'll jump off the throne and go and fetch the shoe in his mouth. Because he's a dog. It doesn't matter how you dress him up or how you decorate him, he's still a dog. So we have a decorated dog society. Even though they may be driving in nice cars and dressed in nice suits, but actually it's Dharmena Hina Pashupir Samana. No difference between. Prabhupada called it polished animalism. Now don't become offended and don't be upset that we're speaking so harshly. But it's true. We have to say this, the real truth. And unless you understand this, then how will you give your full energy to the Vedic literatures? You'll always remain torn. Well, I don't know whether to believe the Vedas on this point or modern science or modern education. You'll always be on the mental platform. So we have to understand. Brahminical school, we need to teach, train up Brahmins. Because without Brahmins, you have no first class man. And what are Brahmins compared to in the body? What part of the body? Now, can you imagine a body without a head? Would anyone, how much would you pay to get a body that didn't have a head? If someone said, I have this man, he's very strong, good muscles, good legs, he can carry heart, and he has good heart, you know, and good, strong hands, and you can have him for very little salary, very little. And someone says, well, why is it so little? One problem is he doesn't have a head. What is the use of such a body? Now, if someone has a body without an arm, he can still work. He can do so many things. Or even without legs, he can do so much work. But without a head, he can't do any work. So this society is a society without a head. What kind of body is that? It's a headless society. Do you agree with me or disagree? Intelligent person has to agree this is a headless society. They don't know. Have you ever seen a chicken running around without a head? What do?
It simplifies. It simplifies for some distance and then...
He what?
The chicken without head flies for some distance and...
Yeah, he runs around, but what does he do? He bumps into everything. Right? He runs, bang, bang. He runs into the wall, bang, 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 bang. And then, because he can't see, he has no head. This is it. Therefore, we have a head, andhai tandai upaniyamaha, the blind leading the blind. Now, what are you going to do about that? Are you going to do anything about it? Or do you think, well, everyone else, they have no head, so I'll also cut off my head. And I'll run around like a chicken with his head cut off also. That's what many young people are doing, isn't it? They take drugs and take intoxication, become illicit sex, and just do like everyone else. I'll cut off my head also. Does that solve the problem? I'll also go to the university and become brainless. Lose my head. So, Prabhupada said, brahminical education is first thing. That has to be the first, because if you don't have a head, then your society is ruined. That's why we say brahminical first. Okay? That has to be the first emphasis. And Prabhupada's idea for Brahmins, and he told me also personally, is they must study his books. That's why he gave us 84 books. So we would study them. Everything is there. I get a little bit impatient when devotees tell me that we need to study all the, you know, other commentators and everything. And of course, there's nothing particularly wrong with that. It's nice. But first, let us study thoroughly what Prabhupada's given us, because he consulted all the commentators. He took the essence of all of their work and he put it into his Bhaktivedanta purports. He wanted this education to be based on his books. I can tell you that. That's what he wanted. He wrote these books, and he was convinced that they are sufficient to give one a well-rounded education, and he'll be the most learned person in the world. And therefore, our colleges. Shall be based on his work. That shows our faith, our faithfulness to him, and our gratefulness. There was one disciple, his name was Shukadev. And Shukadev, he was a president of a temple in Seattle. And at this time, there was some discussion among some devotees that they wanted to read higher books, you know, more. They wanted to know if they could have permission to read other books. And this devotee wrote to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, I'm so satisfied with your books that even if you only wrote one book, I would just read that. Of course, by that time, there were already several books, and of course, more were coming. But still, the devotee said that. And Prabhupada said, yes, this is a disciple. This is a real disciple. He has so much faith in the instructions. Yasudeva prabhakti tade tathagato tasai te kapita yarta prakasham tiyamana. All the truths, prakasham tiyamana, all the Vedic truths will be revealed to him who has implicit faith, Guru and Krishna. So this is essential for medical education. And what does Brahman mean? There's three types. There's dvija. Dvija means twice born. Shudra-sama. Everyone is born. Jayate Shudra. Everyone is born Shudra. Dandane Jayate Shudra. Then, Sanskrit Bhavet Dvija. By samskaras, one becomes twice born. Sure. Then, Vedapatar Bhavet Vipra. By studying the Vedas, he becomes Vipra. And then, Brahmajanatiti Brahman. But one who actually knows Brahman, who's actually situated on the spiritual level, he's a Brahman. So, that's what we want. We want not just Vipras, not just Dvijas, but we want Brahmas. And even further than that, we want Brahmana Vaishnavas. We want these persons to come out as a Brahmana Vaishnava. It means he's equipped with all the nice political qualities, all the knowledge, and he's a loving devotee of Krishna. Wow, this is nothing better than that. That's the greatest jewel, the fruit of our educational system if we can produce such a person. Why? Because such a person
can
preach so beautifully, he can change the whole world. Look at Prabhupada. Prabhupada's books, Prabhupada's teachings. Look what he's doing. Look at the revolution that's happening all over the world. Because any questions? Get Krishna's grace, we have to prepare ourselves. Just like if you want to get the benefit of the sun's rays, you have to come out into the sun. You cannot remain underground in some cave. So we have to come into the Vidyapit, to the place where the transcendental education is being given. We have to give it to the people. So right now we're discussing, I guess you could say, the background of the Vedic college, the basis of it. We'll get into the practical things soon, but I felt that it was good that we had first discussed this part. In the 1970s, on several occasions, Prabhupada expressed that he wanted a Vedic college university, and he said, we will train up our men, and they'll become PhDs and they'll go all over the world preaching as professors. So that was his idea. In fact, he tried to do that in Gorakhpur, here in India. He had some arrangement with the Gorakhpur University and he was trying to set up a branch. It didn't work out, but that was Prabhupada's idea, to bring students from all over the world there and they would get educated. Just as in any other field, there are certain universities in the world that are known as the number one in their field. And students come from all over the world to study there, isn't it? So it's not like we have to have, at least first let's have one. We can duplicate later, but if, at least if there's one place where sincere students can come and learn this science. Okay?
Our temples are also like that.
They're supposed to be. Yes, our temples are supposed to be like that. And if they are, then they have the same value. Sometimes we see, however, that the education side is not always being stressed. And that, of course, that wasn't Prabhupada's idea. It's not within, you could say, ISKCON proper. Some devotee has a correspondence college there. Yes. But, of course, the education should be more than just correspondence. Because, as Prabhupada often explained when he was speaking to the devotees in Berkeley, they were talking about in 75 setting up a college. He said, just as important, or even more important than the academics, is the practical. Going to the RTs, chanting japa, following the regulative principles. Because without those things, what will he learn? What will his education be? He won't understand anything. Okay. So, I'm going to speak a little bit about the type of Vedic college that we have established. Because it's along the lines exactly the way Prabhupada wanted it, at least we're trying our best to do it exactly the way he would like. I'm sure there's some deficiencies because we are deficient in so many ways as disciples, but we're trying our best and we're hopeful that we will get the blessings of Srila Prabhupada and Srila Rupa Goswami. Prabhupada wanted, he named the college Rupanuga Vidyapeeth. Why? Because Rupanuga means the flowers of Rupa Goswami. And Rupa Goswami has, he's like the leader of the Vaishnavas. He's the leader of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. He has enunciated all the teachings of Lord Chaitanya and presented them. So he is the authority. You see, even in the pranam mantras for Bhakti Siddhanta, when it said he's a Rupanuga, Virudapa, Siddhanta, Vantaharine, he's a strict follower of Rupa Goswami, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, strict follower of Rupanuga. But we also want to be Rupanuga. Prabhupada's strict Rupanuga follower. We're proud of being in the line of Rupa Goswami. Okay. Now, the other aspect of a Vedic college, it begins with Brahminical education, but it can expand, and we can expand the curriculum to include Kshatriya education, Vaishya education, and Shudra education. Shudra education would be primarily in the arts, artistic work, and sculpture. This is also considered, or music. Vedic arts is in the category of Shudra, but it has value, a great deal of value. So you have the Brahmanas, they're learning the knowledge. And the Kshatriyas, they're learning how to administrate, how to lead. So they will need to learn, eventually, all the different aspects of what it means to be a Kshatriya. They have to learn how to administrate and to negotiate and to fight also. And to learn how to... So we'll be teaching that, eventually. In a modern environment, how one can be a Kshatriya in the modern day. Just like how can one be a Brahmana in the modern day? Here we are in the 21st century. So what does it mean to be a Brahmana? What are the occupations of a Brahmana? Who knows? Six occupations.
Studying the scriptures and teaching others the scriptures, performing sacrifices, teaching others.
Yes? Yes, accepting charity and giving charity. These are the six occupations of a Brahmana. So we have to train up Brahmanas who will live like that. They study and they teach others. They perform sacrifices, they teach others how to do that. Or they do it on behalf of others. And then they take contributions and they distribute. Now there are some Brahmanas. We have actually. Of course, sannyasis are all Brahmins. So, you see a sannyasi, that's how he lives, isn't it? And, supposed to be also, there are some grihasthas who live like that, some grihastha Brahmins. I was saying, actually, the other day, I was sitting out at our table, many different devotees were coming and very kindly inviting me to come to their country for a visit, for a tour. And they were so nice, they were saying, please come to South Africa, please come to Rwanda. And I was thinking, I would love to come to all these places, but it's difficult to be in so many places. And I was thinking, we have 80 sannyasis now in our movement. And they're all invited to come, so many, everyone wants them to come. And if we had another 80, double that, they would still all be engaged. There's plenty of engagement at least for another 80 sannyasis, I would say, minimum. This is a very good sign. That means that we're beginning to create a society that wants Brahmanas. And then there are other devotees who perform the yajnas, like when you're having a sacrifice or a marriage or something. You know, there's many devotees who you call and you say, could you please come and organize the yajna? So that's also a brahminical task. Well, this way we're actually creating a worldwide society where Brahmanas have the opportunity to live just in performing brahminical activities. And this is very good. Or teaching. Now we have so many institutes. That's recently, there are many colleges and institutes developing. And you notice many of the teachers, they just go from one to the other. I know some devotees, they go to this one, then they give some classes for a month, and they're invited to another one, they give some classes there. So this is brahminical. They're just teaching and studying and doing that. So this way, we're creating an environment that is sustainable for Brahmins. Right now, you may say it's a little bit on the small scale, and that's true, because outside of our society, people don't know about Brahmins. They don't know what the value of a Brahmin is. But that will also, that will change in due course. As our devotees become more and more adept and expert, for example, they can go to universities and take positions as professors in universities. That was what Prabhupada wanted. It just takes a little packaging, right? We have the knowledge, and it's a very interesting subject matter. I was just hearing one of my godbrothers. He's traveling around, he's in England, and he has a card that he gives presentations on Hindu philosophy, or Hindu culture. Now, when he says Hindu, that's just because they think it's Hindu, but actually he presents Gaudiya Vaishnavism in the name of Hinduism, which is fine. And he's invited to high schools and schools all over. He says he does practically 1, 2, 3 classes a day. So this is very good. This is the duty of a Brahmin. He's teaching. He's in demand. He's not changing the teaching, but just presenting it according to time and circumstance. So, if someone is educated in this knowledge, he'll be able to teach. He'll be able to teach in schools. And now we heard that the devotees in Mumbai are beginning programs for teaching business professionals stress management and all these types of things. This is brahminical work. We're teaching them. This is a mixture, isn't it, of philosophy, psychology, counseling, all these things combined. But these are all the activities of Brahmins. Brahmins are the counselors of society. When you want counseling in the Vedic society, who do you go to? You go to a Brahmin. Because Brahmin has knowledge. And Brahmin is very kind. Brahmin is very trusted. So in this way, we'll see that the more and more occupations will be available for the Brahmin. But remember, primarily Brahmins are teachers and spiritual leaders. So you don't expect that there will be as many Brahmanas as necessarily as some of the other groups, like Shudras or something. It's not expected. You don't need them. You don't need as many Brahmanas, because one Brahmana can educate. Just like, how many teachers are there in a country? It's a relatively small number, isn't it, compared to all the other, you know, the workers and the business people. Teachers are a relatively small group. But still you have to have them. Every society. And they don't get paid high salaries. That's another thing. Although they're so essential, the funny thing is they're not paid high salaries. And that is because teachers don't require high salaries. What will I do with all the money? Because a teacher by nature, a Brahmin by nature, he lives very simply. And so he knows, oh, getting more money, I'm just going to become all, you know, entangled in this business. So he lives a simple life. Now, at our Vedic college, we don't charge tuition, because we learn from the Vedic literatures that education is supposed to be free. A Brahmana doesn't take a salary. If he takes a salary, he can't speak the truth. Just like nowadays in the schools. Even if a teacher wanted to speak something different, he couldn't. As soon as he says one thing different, they fire him. He must speak what they say, because he's paid. Like when Chanakya Pandit, who was a Brahmin, he was teaching King Chandragupta. So he would come and speak, and one day Chandragupta, he said, well, I don't agree with that. But Chanakya Pandit didn't take any salary from the king. He just lived in a little thatched hut. So he said, okay, if you don't accept what I say, I won't come, and he just left. That's a Brahmin. He doesn't change according to how much you pay him. He cannot be bought. Very important. Therefore, and besides, we don't want to say that a student cannot attend our college if he doesn't have sufficient financial backing. No, if he's sincere, let him come. And as far as how we will get enough money to run the college, Krishna will arrange. It's true. Krishna arranges. That's the Vedic system. The students, they beg alms. They go door to door and they bring back some dal, rice, and chapatis for the guru. So in that way, the students in our colleges, they should also do some begging of alms. They should do some service. Not that they just study all the time. Because that's part of the educational system. Dasavan, Archavan Dasavan Nicho. He's trained how to be a humble servant. Not that when the teacher says, oh, Prabhu, my dear student, could you kindly clean the floor? He says, no, I already paid my tuition. I don't clean floors. I'm not a bhangi. No, then he will not learn. He has to be willing to be a menial servant. Otherwise, there's no education, because it's all based on that. Because a guru, a teacher, he's not interested in just having some students who are not sincere. Tadidhi paripateyana. Paripateya means humble. Paripateya. And pariprasena, inquiring submissively. That type of student, sevaya, who engages in service, then the teacher becomes very enlightened. Ah, this is a student I will bestow all my learning. Everything I have, I'll give to him. And he enjoys it. So therefore, our colleges have to teach culture as well, not just academics. All these things are required. So we don't charge tuition. We use what's called a work-study or service-study system. In America, they have work-study programs where you can, if you don't have money, you can go to a college and you do work. And that way, you pay for your tuition. So we have a similar system. All of our students do some service. Whatever they can do, it doesn't matter if they can distribute some books or they can work on the computer or clean the temple. It doesn't matter. Whatever they can do. And our college is 18 years and over. Right now, as was brought up before, we're using men's college, men's seminary college. This is quite traditional in many parts of the world. This has been a system that has been used. I know in America, the major universities all started as seminaries, men's colleges. Because it's an environment that's conducive for education. We have... Now, as far as the courses are concerned, any questions so far on any of these points? So the first part?
How will we categorize the people? Like, he's going to be Brahmana or Vaishnava or...
The question is, how will we categorize people? according to guna and karma, his qualities and the type of work that he likes to do to maintain himself. And this is a good point, because actually, until we become very well acquainted with the varnashram system, how will we be able to introduce it in society? Prabhupada wanted us to introduce it. That means the brahmanas, they have the first task. They have to become completely familiar with how the varnashram system is supposed to work. And then they begin teaching that in the Vedic colleges. So the Vedic colleges will be the beginning of the varnashram college, and then that will become the beginning of the varnashram system. Because, first of all, how can you play a part in a drama if you don't know what your part is? Imagine if someone says, you play this part, and you say, what's the script? He says, well, no, we're not going to give you anything. Just make it up as you go along. Won't be a very good performance. You need to have clear, you have to understand from the director, this is your part, this is how you play, you like this. So in the same way, it is the duty of the brahmanas to educate. Just like the brahmanas teach the kshatriyas, this is your duty. They guide him, and they guide the vaishyas. This is your duty. And then the kshatriyas execute, they make sure everyone's doing their duty. Brahmanas give the advice, and the kshatriyas go around and make sure everyone's doing it. They enforce it. Right? They enforce the brahminical culture. And the vaishyas, they sustain everyone. They're the productive class. They're producing, making sure that everyone is maintained. And the shudras, they assist the other three. So you can see what a person's category is by how he earns his living. What does he do to make money? If he works in a factory to make money, well, this is shudra work. He may have other inclinations as well, but how he's getting his money. For a Brahmin, for example, a real Brahmin, he will not work in a factory. You never think of it. You say, would you like to work in a factory to get some money? Even if you offer him a lot of money, he say, no. I'm not interested. Because a Brahmin, he'll be inclined towards those things. So, if we want to introduce Varnashram, we want to fulfill Prabhupada's request, then this Veda college is essential. You can't do it without education. It's all based on education. So, in our college, we have patterned it very similar to the secular colleges in terms of semesters. We run a semester system, 2 semesters per year, 4 months, and we give credits. They usually give like 15 credits, so it's like 5 courses, 5 different topics. So we do that. And the students study. At the same time, at present, we're conducting the college where they live there. They live full time and they study and they do their service. And the results are fabulous. That they become actually very enlightened and become very learned, educated. And then they can teach. They can go anywhere in the world and be a professor. Now, at the present time, of course, the rest of society has not recognized them as being the most learned person. But that will come. Just like in the beginning, people thought the Hare Krishna movement was maybe a joke or something. Now they don't think it's so much of a joke. They have millions of followers, hundreds of centers, big centers. The Prime Minister of India is coming to our centers to open up. So it's not a joke anymore. In the beginning, they thought, what are these people dancing and singing on the streets? They must be picking... Yeah, they had a song here in the movie. They portrayed the devotees as taking marijuana or something like that. But that wasn't... They were in ignorance. They didn't know. But now, no one says that anymore. They know Hare Krishna movement is serious because Prabhupada is such an exalted person. And the Hare Krishna movement is a manifestation of Srila Prabhupada. This movement has so much respectability. The same thing with our colleges. They will also be respected in due course of time. It will take a little while. But as they see our students and our graduates and our professors, they see the quality of the persons and the type of knowledge they have, they will become very, very respected. Already, there are many professors I know in America who have a great deal of respect for our education, and they are very happy they gave their endorsements to our college. So we just have one more minute if there's any last point or question or anything. So we'll, yeah?
Do you also offer correspondence
programs? We don't offer correspondence, primarily just because we're not administratively capable of doing it. We don't have the staff. We're concentrating on the seminary aspect. There are others who may be able to do the correspondence, but because we are especially experienced with the training, the seminary aspect, we're concentrating on that. It's established in Kansas City. We've been there 4 years. Yes, Kansas City. And before that time, we were also working in different places in conjunction with other temples and communities. So we've been actually working on this since 1991 or 92. So it's about 12 years. But the official, this particular college with this 5 buildings exclusively dedicated to this type of education for the last 4 years. So I thank you very much for coming, and we'll stop here. The day after tomorrow, there'll be